Tonight I'd like to share with you some passages by an ancient Zen teacher, Huangbo. These passages are taken from a little chestnut called Zen Roots, the first 1,000 years, 9 sutras and texts translated and commentary by Red Pine. And Huangbo was a teacher in the era of the the series, I'm gonna share with you like sections from a series of talks that come from an era about 842, and he was a teacher at that time, and had these very intense interactions with his students. That I find like kind of entertaining and funny a lot of the time. But he really cuts to the heart of some of the Dharma. I feel like he's always talking about the Heart Sutra. And so I'll read a few passages for you and then kind of talk about them. The first goes like this. Honoring the Buddhas of the 10 directions doesn't compare with honoring a single practitioner with no mind. And how so? Because a person with no mind has no mind at all, only the body of reality itself. It includes no subject or object. Those who are searching for something and who are unwilling to accept this teaching for fear of falling into a void and having nothing to cling to, seeing a precipice, they turn back. Theirs is an endless quest for conceptual knowledge. Just to point out how sacrilegious that might sound, honoring the Buddhas of the 10 directions doesn't compare with honoring a single practitioner with no mind. So this is one of his important teachings, this teaching of everything is mind and there is no mind. On the previous page, he talks about how everything is mind. And then on this page, he talks about that we should honor the practitioner with no mind. How so? Because a person with no mind has no mind at all, only the body of reality itself. This is the practice of no gap, of intimacy with things just as they are. The practice of letting go of all of our scaffolding and structures for what we think we should be, for what we think good practice is, and simply waking up, simply realizing the nature of things in this very moment. Huangbo was a strong advocate of that. Letting go of this idea of a path that's going to take us somewhere. If I do this practice for long enough, I'll be better. I'll be this, I'll be that. It's quite something when he says those who are searching for something and who are unwilling to accept this teaching fear falling into a void, and having nothing to cling to. Seeing the precipice, they turn back. Theirs is an endless quest for conceptual knowledge. When I was a child, we didn't have air conditioning in anything. I'm sure this is true for others in the room. And then there are some of you who are perhaps young enough to have only grown up with air conditioning and cell phones. But we didn't have cell phones or computers. And in the summer, we would open the windows and we could hear the rain. We might turn on a fan. It really felt like the environment was part of the home. Like tonight, some of us may come here and practice and feel like the environment is a little too much part of the home. Perhaps wishing it were cooler, or that there weren't so many mosquitoes or spiders laying eggs in your hair. I think a spider web was built between my ear and my shoulder this evening as we were sitting together. We really are not separate from the outside. But we often think that we are. And we have preferences. There are certain things that we prefer and other things that we don't. And we want to acclimatize the inside of ourselves so that it is just right. Create boundaries and walls around ourselves so that we don't have to feel the discomfort of one body, the vulnerability of being so profoundly interconnected with the world. And of course, the damage that we cause based on this illusion. We control the little environment in our home, perhaps, while ripping down rainforests to fuel the energy. It's really something. I think it's a lovely thing that we come here and practice together once a week and we feel the heat and we hear the rain and the thunder and we smell it in the room with us and the floors are sticky with humidity. How beautiful. Like being a child again and smelling the honeysuckle in my room in the night as its flowers opened and let forth their fragrance. It is quite a vulnerable thing, this practice of being one with reality. But such an expansive and beautiful thing. To allow that separateness to drop away. Most people think the Dharma body fills space or that space contains the Dharma body. They don't realize that the Dharma body is space and space is the Dharma body. If someone contends space exists, then space isn't the Dharma body. If someone contends the Dharma body exists, then the Dharma body isn't space. Don't create a conception of space. Space is the Dharma body. And don't create a conception of the Dharma body. The Dharma body is space. Emptiness is exactly, this is me now. Emptiness is exactly form. Form is exactly emptiness. There are no differences between space and the Dharma body. There are no differences between Buddhas and beings. There are no differences between samsara and nirvana. There are no differences between affliction and enlightenment. Whatever is free of all appearances, that is Buddha and me. Whatever is free of the distinctions that we make, the determinations we make with our minds about this and that, is Buddha. Ordinary people grasp objects. Practitioners grasp the mind. When objects and mind are both forgotten, that is the true Dharma. Forgetting objects is easier. Forgetting the mind, the self, is harder. People aren't willing to forget the mind. They are afraid that if they fall into emptiness, there won't be anything to grab hold of. And of course, it's true. There isn't actually anything to hold on to. Try as hard as we might, we cannot hold on to moments, to feelings, even to people we love. So most people aren't willing to empty their mind. They are afraid of falling into a void. They don't know their mind is already empty. Foolish people get rid of things, not the mind. The wise get rid of the mind, not things. Bodhisattvas' minds are like space. They let everything go. And neither do they desire, nor are they attached to any blessing or merit that they might thereby create. And now he sets forth three tiers of practice for us to examine together that I want to share with you. Top tier, this is the best of us. Letting the body and the mind go, everything, inside and outside, until it's all like space and there's nothing to grab hold of. And responding to things according to the situation and letting subject and object go, this is the highest kind of letting go. Here are the middling among us. Cultivating the way and performing acts of charity on the one hand, and letting go and having no expectations on the other hand. This is the middle kind of letting go. How interesting. And the lowly among us. Performing all manner of good deeds, but expecting something in return. Then, hearing the Dharma and understanding that what they do is empty and no longer engaging in it. This is the lowest kind of letting go. Huang Bo was Linji's teacher. Linji, obviously important. We read a reading by Linji today. You can hear quite a bit of Huang Bo in Linji. He says, the Dharma of the mind has no form and pervades the 10 directions. In the eye, it is called seeing. In the ear, hearing. In the nose, smelling. In the feet, walking. If you want to get free from birth and death, from coming and going, from taking and putting on, know and take hold of the one who is now listening to the Dharma. This one has neither form nor shape, neither root nor trunk nor dwelling place. This one is as lively as a fish jumping in water and performs functions in response to all situations. Only the place of functioning is not a locality. The place of functioning is not a locality. Of course, most of us would say the place of functioning is me. It's quite a striking teaching, actually. Reminds us of the sentence about how the mind is reality itself. The mind is reality itself functioning, which is why there is no mind at all. This is the highest kind of letting go. letting go of the idea that there is anybody to whom I could be charitable. The Diamond Sutra. Save all beings, though there are no beings to save. What is that then? It's reality functioning. And we are part of that movement. We simply respond accordingly. Nothing special about me, the charitable one, who's going to be enlightened because he's so charitable. And yet, isn't that just precisely what many of us do all the time? We do a good deed and we look for the thank you. We hope for it. Sometimes we get it, sometimes we don't. Frustrated when we don't. That's also just reality functioning, you know. It would be easy to turn that into a self, wouldn't it? That then needs to be fixed. So in a sense, it doesn't matter which way you practice, the highest or the lowest form of letting go. Just see the grasping. See the longing. See the desire. Because as he says, it's all empty anyway. What does that mean, empty? I love this line. Rainbow says a little later in this piece. He says, people nowadays just want to acquire more conceptual knowledge. They search everywhere for the meaning of words and call this practice. They don't realize that more conceptual knowledge just builds bigger walls. In the Tathagarbha, not even a speck of dust can exist. This reminds us of the sixth ancestor's poem, Huainong. You may know the story from the Platform Sutra. There's a little competition. Who can write the best poem? Whoever writes the best poem gets the robes, gets to be the next transmitted Dharma heir. So a relatively senior monk says, just keep that mirror clean and bright so that no dust can land on it. Huainong, who is actually illiterate, think you need to be smart? Has nothing to do with how smart you are. He has someone else write the following poem on the wall for him. There is no Bodhi tree, nor stand of a mirror bright, since all is originally empty. Where can dust alight? Do we think there's something wrong with ourselves that needs to be fixed? Reminds us of the beautiful story. Student comes to Bodhidharma and says, there's something wrong with me. Can you help me out? What's wrong with you? Well, it's my mind. Oh, well, show me your mind and I'll fix it for you. And so the monk says, well, I've looked and looked for my mind. I can't find it anywhere. And Bodhidharma says, then I have fixed your mind for you. There's nothing there to be fixed. That's just another idea that we have. And then we go about creating all kinds of strategies for how to fix it. And we create all these steps and hoops we have to jump through, practices, and on we go. And Huangbo is saying, listen, it's right here. The capacity for realization, the intimacy of the universe. The windows are wide open, folks. They always have been. There is no gap. There never has been. No gap between you and Buddha. We go looking for Buddha outside of ourselves. We go looking for enlightenment outside of ourselves. Go looking for peace outside of ourselves. It's very interesting how koans and life throw us into situations that we just can't escape. And in those moments of intensity, when it's really cooking, when life is really cooking, when a koan is really hot for us, it's like we've swallowed that hot iron ball. We just want to drop it, put it down. But it's just living there in the gut, alive and hot. Or when something intense happens in our lives, and the feelings are so strong and powerful in us, in those moments, we just want to spit out that hot iron ball. We want nothing to do with life. We want to be somebody else. We want to trade our life for somebody else. But we can't. Those are the great moments of practice for us, incredible opportunities to practice bowing down, to practice being one with reality. We think that the good part doesn't include the bad part. If I can get the good part and not the bad part, please. And that's how we start closing up the windows, separating ourselves off, getting protective, and the notion of a self is born. And we become small. That sense of smallness right there is the opportunity. The opportunity to practice and look inward and see, what am I really? To drop that question into your practice, to live with it for a long, long time, for your whole life, to wonder. Because the real Dharma gate is not knowing. We really think we know what we are. We're pretty sure about it. And we're scared, because what would it mean not to know? It might mean falling into a void. It might mean not existing. The terror there, huh? The practice invites us to stay intimate with that. Right with the fear as fear. All of it a Dharma gate. An opportunity to be present to what actually is. It's not what we think. It's never what we think. Thank you.